Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I love Christmas, and I especially love Christmas traditions. The presents, the stockings, my mom cooking her amazing Christmas Eve dinner. Bo resenting the hell out of my mom's amazing Christmas Eve dinner. And me, giving my kids all the Christmas bells and whistles I never had. But in the midst of all the festivities, I never want my kids to forget the true meaning of Christmas and the man this day is really about. Santa. Santa was the first white man I ever loved, followed by a close second, Terry Bradshaw. But back to Santa. I love Santa so much because I never got to believe in him as a kid.
Look who Santa brought me, Daddy.
You better get out of here with that. That was from me and your daddy. You think some fat white man showed up on Jesus' birthday and gave you those full price socks? I don't think so.
But no matter how hard they tried or didn't try at all, no parent can ever beat Santa because Santa is Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
And at the Stevens and Lido Christmas party, Santa is and always has been Fred Garner. 364 days a year, Fred is a low-level account manager with a high-level meat intake. But one day a year, Fred becomes a hero to every child at the party because he's Santa. And Santa's the man.
So we're on for Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you think, Fred?
But not that man, because he's dead.
I mean, who'd be a better Santa than me? I mean, I'm fun, I love kids, and everybody at work is like family to me.
Hey, how's everybody taking Fred's death?
How am I supposed to know? Focus, all right?
First of all, Christmas is about Jesus, not Santa. And second, leave Santa to the white folks. Let's get a black James Bond first. Idris Elba.
Hennessy. Shaken, not stirred.
Calm down, all right? Look, Stevens and Lido needs a black Santa. I mean, everybody at the office invites an adoptive family to the party. Like, for most of these kids, the only Santa they've ever known has been some random white guy. This is my opportunity to show these kids that Santa can look like them.
Mm-hmm. How can Santa look like a kid? Santa looks like Santa.
Of course, baby. Santa looks just like Santa.
Yep, because there's only one Santa.
Mm-hmm.
But Daddy wants to be one of Santa's helpers.
Sure.
Isn't that nice?
But we'll still get our presents from the real Santa, right? The white one?
Yeah.
Now, at some point every...
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. I feel like today is maybe the one time, maybe next week too, but one of the few times where it is not as important. People know what a huge day, all the celebrating, December 25th, 2018. So I have been told pagan rituals have taken over the world. The madness is zany. One thing that I can say, Gus T. Renegade, hopefully here to share constructive information for a special broadcast with the horror days. One thing that I can say with the madness, with the flooding and having me be back in the downtown area of a major city and being in the chaos of how they invest so much time and energy in the holidays, that has been for two consecutive years now. Like, wow. Just seeing how much madness white saying that they don't have time and energy for this. They don't have time and energy for that. But wow, we can burn up some lights and candles and decorations, and they got to get city workers to come out and hang all this nonsense up. Woo. The madness of white Christmas. Anyway, the audio segment that played at the beginning of the broadcast that was Blackish. I don't watch the show. That's why it took me. I played that audio segment. We were on 2014. Pamela Evans Harris, the late. She was on December 25, 2014. And I played that audio segment at the beginning. I think that episode of Blackish had just come on a few days before, but I was going back and listening. I was going to get Pam saying something just about the way we use our time and energy around this madness. But we really didn't talk a whole lot about the holidays on that broadcast. We were talking about a lot of other things related to racism, white supremacy, just the business at hand, which is, you know, something we have tried to continue here at the Cows for 10 years. The broadcast today, inviting some of our international participants to share a view. I did think it would be interesting, or I guess actually to be completely truthful, I said last month the flood disrupted lots of things with the scheduling this year. We got the Global Sunday talk on racism back November. We were broadcasting. I had said, you know, let's be back to the normal slot for this program, which is the third Sunday of every month, which would have been the 16th for this month. I said, let's do it then. Mary, one of our listeners in London, she said, you know, hey, maybe the 25th, I would have time and be able to participate then. And I said, hey, we will see if others would be interested in joining us for the 25th. I said I was going to go ahead and try for the 16th just because, you know, I wanted to get back on the normal schedule so that everybody get in the routine of third Sunday, bam, Global Sunday talk. But, you know, doing it on the 25th, if people have time off and would be interested in joining in, I said, hey, we can give it a whirl if you all are so interested. Several folks said, hey, they would be down to join in. So we'll get some of our international participants on the line with us. Give me one second here. And I will add them on the line. I guess you might hear a ring or whatever it is as we're adding folks. Forgive. Let's see. Make sure I did not miss anyone. Okay. I'm going to add folks to the line. Normal procedure. If you're listening stateside or wherever else in the world you happen to be, certainly you can chime in, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Grant, before I nab our international folks as they hop in on the line here, also the tech issues, man, what a year for obstacles, sliding the flood aside. So this weekend, I had trouble even logging in at Black Talk Radio Network. Much obliged to Mr. Scotty Reed, founder of the Black Talk Radio Network. As usual, if I ever have problems with Black Talk Radio Network specifically, he is generally right on the spot to help me try to figure it out as best he can, which he was this time. I think we got that problem solved, or not we, Mr. Reed got that problem solved. So I think that has been taken care of, but that caused some disruptions for at least 2 days over the weekend. The compensatory call-in, I couldn't even log in. I couldn't even get the description or anything posted there. I did, however, get the upload of the audio archive at our SoundCloud website, and I will be getting the audio at the normal spots once, you know, I have time to go back to backtrack to kind of correct what was missed from the weekend. But that was one. We've had phone obstacles be in Toronto, and other have written about not even being able to dial in and getting all kinds of odd messages when they do use the number to call in for the broadcast, the very number that I'm using right now. The archive at iTunes being disrupted, not being able to upload there, not even getting information as to what the problem is with the upload at iTunes. My Wi-Fi was disrupted last weekend, not just a normal disruption, like the signal totally disappearing. It would come in for like a minute or two, disappear, come in for a minute or two, disappear. That went on for at least 3-4 days of last week. Constant disruptions. And again, all I can say, system of racism, white supremacy, that is to be expected. Anyone, I wouldn't care what you are doing, if you're making an effort, any sort of effort, to fight against racism, white supremacy, you can expect opposition, especially even if it might be, and I mean just a little bit constructive. It's not even saying that you're doing monumental things, just stumbling in the direction of maybe this maybe could be effective and somehow working against racism, white supremacy. Expect disruptions and opposition from whites and victims of racism, unfortunately. That said, our folks joined us internationally. I might have missed a few. I'll have to check back to see if I need to call other folks. Andrew, are you with us, sir? Live in London?
Yes. Hi, Gus. Glad to be with you. How are you doing? You okay?
As well as can be expected. Right poorly, the general one, but, you know, hanging in for the day. How are you, sir?
I'm well. Just looking forward, really, to this broadcast. And, to be honest, just really looking forward to the broadcast. You know, it's been a long time coming. So yeah, just looking forward just to get stuck in.
Amen. Thank you for sharing a bit of your time and energy. I don't know if you celebrate or what have you. I think when we spoke last, you said you were looking forward to spending time with the family. Of course, I think a lot of folks can agree there. But I don't know if you're into any of the festivities or anything. Such as, I think you were going to get books. Didn't you say you were getting books for the family members? Was that you? My memory bad?
A friend of mine, brilliant guy called Neil Myers. Everybody over here has heard of him. He does these Black History calendars. So I mean, they're great. So I got her one of those and got her a book as well. You know, this book called Acts of Faith. By Van Zandt, I think that's how you pronounce her name. You know, I thought that as a Black woman, Mum may want to read it or not. So I got Mum that, God, what else? You know, Kwanzaa starts tomorrow and goes on for the next few days. So, you know, people got Kwanzaa cards, and you know that's always good because it causes discussion. You know, and it's always interesting, those kind of discussions. And that was it, you know. Those are the only things that I bought. You know, I mean, Christmas is is always an interesting time because obviously people spend money that they don't have, you know, and you know, people are, you know, I heard it said on the radio, people are credit rich. You know, so it's a funny time, you know, when, and, you know, I do say to people, don't buy me anything. You don't need to buy me anything. Don't buy anything at all for me. You know, really just keep the money in the bank, pay your bills and that's it. You know, that is all people need to do, you know, but, some people are addicted to this time of year, you know, and it's quite sad, actually. It's worrying that people are happy to possibly put themselves into debt that they end up paying off for the next 6 months. Ridiculous, you know, but that's what it is to be addicted to you know lifestyle in white countries, you know.
System of racism, white supremacy. Before I get to Mr. Fox, I don't know, or I guess I'll ask you all as we proceed, but I know here in the States, they have what they call fat shaming, right? To tease and pick at you if you're overweight. Then they have holiday shaming. They have that around here tough if you, you know, are acting like you don't want to get into the gift giving spirit. You don't want to do a candy cane and do some caroling, like, oh man, they start to give you those, call you Scrooge, they name call you, and they do not take kindly to folks seeming like you do not want to engage in all of the white supremacist holiday activities, including the gift giving. Like, what's wrong with you? You stingy? What's wrong? You don't care about us? What's wrong with you? You don't want to get me it? Like, oh man, they it can get right hostile. Mr. Fox, longtime investor, has been gracious with his time and energy to upload a lot of the archives to YouTube, which has helped a lot of people access the content, hopefully worthy of his time and energy, and has hopped on to join us for the Global Sunday Talk, even though this is not Sunday, has jumped on to share views with us repeatedly. Always a pleasure to have him with us. Mr. Fox, are you there, sir?
Good evening. Hello. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Crystal, good sir. How are you this evening?
Not too bad. Miserable. I just want this day to end, to be honest with you.
Wow. What has been so rough about the day for you?
I cannot take Christmas. I think the older I'm getting, the more miserable I'm getting with that actual whole day and in context of what it actually does support. I understand the family get-together element of it, but the present buying, and as Andrew stated, people are breaking their necks to rush out there and buy their gifts, get their food, all for this one day, just for 24 hours. And around this time of year as well, you get people dying, because I remember a couple of years ago where I think either a bus or a vehicle accidentally plowed into a group of people who were, you know, during this time doing their Christmas shopping. So people do lose their lives around this time of year through rushing up and down, trying to get in the last bits and the last gifts to give to their so-called loved ones. So just the day in general just annoys me, but I've just hopefully got it over soon.
It'll be back to normal day on the plantation by tomorrow. Kwanzaa notwithstanding, it'll be back to normal. I was thinking here in the States, even Paul F. Iommi Grant, he's over your side of the pond. He's been on the program repeatedly. When they go out and brawl to get gifts, sometimes they do some killing in the gift getting, in the gift purchasing, I should say. I know over here they frequently have brass knuckles while they're in line scrapping for gifts. And at least once or twice every year, you'll see footage of a stampede. Somebody gets killed or ran over at the department store. Like, that's a part of all the fun of the spirit. You're supposed to go out and, you know, elbow for gifts and such. Let's see. Also with us in London, thank everyone we have with us thus far is in the UK area, longtime participant as well. And I think it was her idea about, hey, perhaps you could do it on December 25. More of us will be away from the plantation, so we could join in then. Mary, also with us from London. Are you with us, ma'am?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Glad to have you back with us. How are you doing this evening, and how has your December 25 been thus far?
It's been okay. I was actually asleep before joining, and I realized what the time was.
Well, I'm apologies for disrupting your slumber. It's 8:11 over there, and if you use the day to catch up on your rest, you constructive use of time and energy. Bravo! Did you do anything else with the day, or you just took it easy?
Took it easy. It's one of my parents' birthdays, so that's what I use this day for, just to celebrate them. But yeah, I was napping. I can't lie.
Spectacular. No shame there. We will not be doing 3 hours, so hopefully we will not tie up too much of your evening. You can get back to napping and getting your rest so you can be strong on the plantation. Wow. So these are our international folks for now. If other folks, certainly you're welcome if you want to dial in, if you want to ask them a question, what's going down. I was certain Andrew was with us a week ago when we had our half attempt with all the difficulties to do the Global Sunday Talk. We were talking about Brexit and all of that. I certainly would be curious to get you all's opinions about the whole Brexit issue, but it's been a while at least since we've chatted up, Mr. Fox and Mary. I feel like so many things have happened in the world and in your part of the world internationally. Anything specifically that you all think is important that you would like to make sure that we cover that's transpired over the last few months since we've talked to you? Mary, Mr. Fox?
So much has happened. I don't think there's really one thing to pinpoint, to be honest with you. Maybe if you decide what you want to talk about, it might start a conversation. I don't know.
Let's see. We heard Andrew when he was with us last week. He was giving us his thoughts on Brexit and even made several predictions about Theresa May, how this was going to unfold. We did kind of give for listeners wherever they happen to be who were maybe not as familiar or haven't been paying as much attention with Brexit. That's with Britain saying, hey, we want to leave the union. In my view, a lot of this seemed to be tied to racism, seemed to be a lot of gripes about non-white people tramping through Britain. And we don't need all of these folks here. They have too much access to our part of the world. Let's hop out of this union and we can, you know, restrict some of this. That seemed to be a big part of it. Not all, but a big portion. So now they're trying to go through all of that's how Theresa May even came to be prime minister. 2016 was about Brexit. So now they're trying to go through all of the technicalities of Britain leaving the European Union. Andrew was saying that he thought Theresa May is going to end up costing her her job. She's going to be out and the Conservatives are going to win. That's why she was trying to stall with this vote and everything, was to try to delay this so this doesn't blow up and end up launching her out of her prime minister position. But he said he thought a lot of that was going to happen anyway. You all are right there, ground zero. For international listeners who might not be following this, I guess what's your thought on this? And I guess why do you think this is important related to racism, white supremacy, the controversy around Brexit, Theresa May? There, that'd be one thing I'd pick. Mary?
Okay. All right. So My response is going to be a bit long-winded, but my profession is legal, okay? And about 6 or 7 years ago, I went to a seminar on the European arrest warrant because European member states like to help each other with the detection of crime and the arrest of anyone that they suspect. So say, for example, if someone's murdered someone in London and the person lives in Poland, they may have the ability right now to get that person back over the borders from Poland into London so that they can face justice. So one of the things that came out about the European arrest warrant that I was acutely aware of all those years ago was that basically, I already knew at that point, because this was a proposal, that the government was going to go to Europe to try and detach themselves. But at the same point in time, what they were going to attempt to do was to untangle themselves from European law altogether and untangle themselves from the arm of the European Court of Justice and the European Court of Human Rights so that they would be self-determining. But in doing so, what they wanted to do was cherry-pick the laws that would be most favourable to this country and derogate from anything that would not be favourable. And the other is it 26 or 27 European states said no. If you're all in, you're all in. You can't cherry pick what you want. So I already knew a while ago that what they were going to go and do wouldn't work because Europe had already said what they needed to say on that point. But most importantly, what I came to understand from it was that no one understood what the functioning roles of Europe were about. So when you go to, for example, your typical MEP, which is a minister of European Parliament, a lot of them don't understand what the other ministers do. And a lot of them don't understand what the functions of Europe are or what the other arms are doing. So they all seem to be working not in unison with each other, but separately. And there's very few people that understand how the whole picture comes together. So no one really understood how they were going to detach from Europe or what the effects would be. And you have to bear in mind that England's joining, or the UK's joining the European Union, has been in its inception since the 60s. So you're talking about trying to untangle something that has been in its inception since before I was even born. And then it got basically ratified in the 90s. And then everything began to, you know, this country began to become entangled in European law. So one of the things that baffled me was, how were you going to untangle 40 odd years of people, of this whole amount of law and jurisdiction being untangled? How are you going to do it in 24 months? That baffled me. But most importantly, it's Andrew's absolutely correct in terms of the fact that it was born out of racism, because when the vote was decided, and the vote was decided as being leave, you saw the visceral reaction of people on the streets telling people to go back to where they come from, et cetera, et cetera. And the vote was basically predicated on racial prejudice, when really people didn't really think about the financial impact, the legal impact of this country trying to unfurl itself from Europe full stop. It was predicated purely on racial bias, on white people saying that they wanted their country back. I mean, I think that the cowbell should be inserted here, because Cheddar Man, that's all I'll say about that, them wanting their country back. But it was purely based on that. And what I'm seeing is that this being a gateway, with, you could even put Windrush beside that as well, because I believe that they're going to try and find a way for even children of Caribbean parents that were born here, they're going to find a way to get us up out of here. And them taking themselves out of Europe is just a small part of them unfurling themselves away from the rest of the world. But another interesting aspect of this is that recently I was watching TV, and I very seldomly do, but they were polling basically the white people to find out what they were thinking about the vote, and, you know, however many months later, what did they think? And they kept on saying that they thought it was a massive mistake. They didn't understand the impact, etc. And I thought to myself, you guys can eat it. Let the chips fall where it may. There should be no second referendum on this. You decided that this is what you wanted. So this is what you shall have, and you shall suffer. And the reason why I'm so staunchly behind what's happening to them and the pain that they're feeling is because it's got nothing to do with black people. In terms of any decisions that have been made that affect us, we don't ever have a voice in it. It's decided for us. So we don't ever get, our voices don't count for anything. Even where we come from, our voices don't count for anything. So if you guys feel pain because you wanted us to suffer and you want to be away from us so bad, then so be it, because we don't get to decide what happens to us anyway. It's a white man's world at the end of the day. We don't have a say in our own suffering. You guys didn't think about, you didn't take a logical viewpoint and think that we're going to suffer financially coming away from this because England has no natural resources. The only two things that make this economy work are financial services and arms. Those are the only two things that this whole country is built on, that's stealing, but arms and financial services. So if you're racial prejudice and you're pure hatred, which is what you guys come from anyway, make you suffer, then you should suffer. So Theresa May, her job, whatnot, I couldn't give a flying crap about it, because at the end of the day, until we make moves that make us determine what happens to us, we'll always be at their mercy. And that includes what's happening in this country now, regardless of whether or not we are here or not. And that's my take. I'm sorry it's been so long-winded.
No worries. I'm glad you got your rest. You could be well energized to come in and give us some views on what's happening there. That is fascinating and reminded me of, I think, one of the key points that Andrew raised when he spoke with us previously and gave us his predictions, Theresa May's downfall and the rise of the conservatives. He said that a key aspect of this was to remove, talking about Britain, to remove themselves from judicial oversight. That was a key aspect of what he said this was about. Non-white people that are there, if they're having a problem, racism, white supremacy, and they're looking for judicial redress of grievances to report that they're being mistreated, hey, we're not in the EU anymore. You don't have anyone else to go and voice that you're being abused or terrorized to try to get some intervention on your behalf, because we're not in that anymore. So we have the final say about, you know, whatever's going to happen here. We have final jurisdiction of what's going to take place here. He thought that was a key component of this as well. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
It is. Sorry, just very quickly. It is. They wanted to have a British Bill of Rights. I remember that, but no one knew what exactly this was going to contain, how this was going to work in the European framework, how anything was going to get done legally, because how would it fit in with anything else? You couldn't ask the other member states to help you with anything. And that was one of my worries when I heard that during the seminar. I still have the notes on my shelf from all those years ago. He's absolutely right. It was to do that. But I think that because there's no real sovereignty of law, you have primary and tertiary law in this country, I don't know how they're going to do that. I don't think that they can. If they do, it's going to be an absolute nightmare. I don't know. We'll see where the chips may fall. But it may lead to civil unrest, because I don't know what you're going to do about that.
Stand by your work. Mr. Fuller says that all the time. If that is indeed happening, where this is causing confusion for other whites, or they're upset about some of them, they didn't think about everything in advance, about the ramifications of leaving and all of that, stand by your work. Mr. Fox, your thoughts on the recent controversy around Brexit, its implications for racism, white supremacy?
Well, from what I've been seeing from it, because I've not been paying too much attention to it, because at times, due to work commitments, I don't really get much time to actually see a lot of this real-time news going on. But no doubt about it that the original decision was based on racism. But hearing from Andrew and Mary regarding the deeper elements regarding the judicial parts of it, it makes sense. But I think people in this country didn't realise the financial, you know, causes which are going to affect dropping out of Europe, because we don't really produce much except for, we're big on arms, like China and America and, you know, Germany and other countries. We're good on exporting arms, but as in other resources, no, England are not built for that. So I actually did see some live TV a couple of weeks ago where I think they're doing I think it might have been on BBC One or BBC Two, and it was following Boris Johnson, because I think he's resigned now from the position he was in. Can't remember the position it was, but it had something to do with either the Foreign Office. He was, can't remember his role, but I think, if I'm not correct, that he has resigned from that post. But it was following him and how the Foreign Office operates and what it was doing to try and build up good relations with the ex-so-called colonial, you know, provinces and other parts of the world to try and build up a good trade relationship due to what's going to be happening with this Brexit. And you just saw how the Foreign Office was operating. It was going over to France, trying to get up good relationships for trade. It was even going to Ghana and Mongolia. It had, you know, Foreign Offices all over the place, just trying to build up some kind of a good trade relations due to what's going to be happening with this Brexit thing. But no doubt about it, it was all built on, you know, from my point of view, it was all built on racism, really. But you've seen, because you had, when it first came into effect, when you had the Polish coming over, which is about 10 years ago, or I think it could be a bit longer, but the Polish came over. You had the Polish and Eastern Europeans coming over. The English didn't really like them, but bearing in mind, you know, a lot of them were coming over, finding work, either self-employed plumbers or, you know, some cleaning or small other jobs. The English were complaining how some of them were taking their jobs, but then bearing in mind, Polish and other Slavic nations which were coming over are basically white people and have came over, and these people have had kids. So 10 years ago, if they came over and had kids, these kids now are now 10 years old, white, speaking in English accents, but can speak Polish or Slavic language as either their first or second language, but still they're white. But I think it was based on the other groups who were not classed as white coming over here, that they were thinking, you know, see you later, get back to your own country. But now they're thinking of the financial implications of what's happened now. People are starting to panic. But that's my, you know, thoughts, my slight observations on what's been going on.
Yikes, that is, at least to me, that is frightening. If whites are starting to panic, they generally become increasingly violent when whites panic. I could be in error. That is, just in terms of the financial impact, it reminds me of this part of the world. I could see something very similar happening by the time, whenever it is. I think our current president, Donald Trump, is going to be 2 terms. So whenever his time in the White House ends, I could see something very similar. What Mr. Fox and Mary, what you all have said, I could see that applying to whites in the U.S. as we didn't realize the financial implications of having, you know, Trump in the White House for 8 years. Andrew, I said, gave us predictions before. The most critical aspect, I should have started with that because I thought that was the most critical aspect, was leaving the European Union, removing judicial oversight so that non-white people do not have another avenue to appeal if they are being mistreated in any way. That has been removed by no longer being in the union. He said that was a key component he thought of this and how it relates to racism, white supremacy predictions, thinking Theresa May is going to be out. Even you mentioned Boris Johnson. I remember when he was mayor during the 2011 so-called London riots after Mark Duggan was summarily executed. But I remember Boris Johnson, mayor at the time, was running around London and wagging his fingers in the face of black people out in the streets. BBC has a lot of archival footage of him doing that. Andrew, are you sticking to your predictions? Theresa May's in trouble, conservatives on the rise, and this being directly related to removing judicial oversight. You sticking to your prediction, sir?
I'm not sure about conservatives on the rise, but yeah, but you know the way Parliament seems to be structured here. You know, as I understand it, you know, they got she avoided a vote. As I was saying the last time, you know, she, you know, it's probably, I'm sure it was reported in the state, you know, she avoided a vote, you know, an important vote on her plan that she published and brought back from the EU, you know, from the talks they were having over there. But she avoided a vote in Parliament about it. But, you know, sooner or later, or in January, they've got to have that vote. That I'd be very surprised if that plan goes through, you know, be very surprised about that, because that's the reason why she postponed the vote the last time, you know, because it was going to get, she was afraid it was going to get voted down. And politicians on in her party across the board publicly said, I mean, you know, Rees-Mogg publicly said he does not support his prime minister, you know, his leader. So that's going to get voted down. That is going to possibly trigger possibly a vote of no confidence within the party, or another general election. If it does one of those, then, you know, you're talking about possibly the Labour Party coming in, and then really then it could be anything from a second referendum, or it could be effectively a second referendum. Because if you're going to, you know, because really no one, very few politicians actually fancy her plan, which means you've got to go back for a second plan or leave with no deal. If you leave with no deal, then that's going to cost this country a lot of money. I mean, it's costing this Brexit, right, which is predicated by, underpinned by you know, by racism, is already costing this country loads and loads of money. I mean, isn't it funny? You know, I mean, for a long time, Gus, I've wondered, what is the chink in racist practice? You know, what is the chink in racist practice? And what's happening in this country is so interesting, because the chink in what I'm looking at is that the chink in racist practice is racism itself. You know, and it's, you know, I mean, to use a metaphor, it's called cutting off your nose to spite your face. You know, in other words, with all these white racists running around in this country wanting non-whites out of the country, or wanting non-white slaves, effectively non-whites to work for next to nothing, and, you know, basically to be, you know, to be their toilets, right? Effectively, what is they're costing themselves millions every week, and that's what's going on here through lost business, because businesses, because of the uncertainty, it's, you know, a lot of businesses are not investing in expanding their businesses in the UK because they don't know which way things are going to go. And that's costing the country money. Brilliant. I love it. Basically.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's brilliant. You know, I have this conversation with some of my family, and they say to me, yeah, but you're going to suffer too. And I say, well, that's great. That's fine. I don't mind. And that brings me on to a second thing, you know, I want to talk about a bit later on, and that's investing outside of the UK into Africa, you know, and spreading your eggs, putting your eggs not just in one UK basket, you know. But that's a whole different thing. So it'd be, as I said before, you know, predictions are always interesting, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in this country over the, you know, by the end of January, because we've got to have that. This country has to have that vote. So basically, the lay of the land is going to be anything but what it currently is, you know, because it's either going to be, you know, the country's either going to be leaving with no deal, or having a second referendum, or going back to Europe for another deal. But that's not going to happen. So it's either going to be a second referendum or leaving with no deal. Do you know what I mean? So, shall I come in with the other things I want to talk about later, Gus?
Well, I was going to ask a question about Pam. Let's hear one of them. Let's hear at least one of them that you, something else you want to talk about.
Yeah. Well, all it was really was, for the last couple of weeks anyway, and I heard it on another station, they were talking about, the pulling down of an image, a statue of Mahatma Gandhi. I don't know if it's relevant to the show where you want to go to discuss, but it is about the pulling down of a statue of Mahatma Gandhi in Ghana, mm-hmm. right? And in a Ghanaian university. So it's just interesting why the students did it. It's because of racist statements made by Mahatma Gandhi in one of his books, and also about the growing identity of Ghanaian young people, of Ghanaian students, which is the bit that I found quite interesting, and how they view themselves, and what they wanted to do was put up statues of their own people, of African people, And I found, in light of the growing economies in Africa, whether it's northwest, east, or south, I found that whole thing really, really interesting, you know, in terms of self-respect and all of those types of things. And the fact that even though the world's had a massive recession, which has affected every country, including African countries, Africa still has some of the fastest growing economies. So investing our money as black people, African people, in that continent, and moving some of our finances out of the UK, I think is really, really important. So becoming familiar, visiting the African continent, right, this is a brilliant time, especially for Africans, black people living in the UK, to do this, you know. But as this economy goes down, it'd be lovely to think that African economies are going up. Because at the end of the day, I believe our seat of self-respect is on that continent, if you know what I mean. In other words, that is where most of us are as black people, as African people. So to reconnect tangibly with and invest our time and energy into that continent, where, you know, wherever one feels at home, it doesn't have to be West Africa, even though I know that a lot of us possibly come from West Africa, whether it be Ghana, Nigeria, Gambia, or, you know, another part of South Africa. I think it's an interesting time to make that connection. So, yeah.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged for the suggestions. Number one, I think that is a phenomenal act of black self-respect. I did see that report about the statue of Gandhi being removed in West Africa. I think it was a Ghanaian university, but absolutely, I think the grandsester, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she consistently talked about the importance of black self-respect. And I think when you start to nourish and grow that black self-respect, you start to see acts like that you just will not tolerate things that reinforce anti-blackness, that reinforce white supremacy, anything that is about minimizing or in any way degrading black people just will become repulsive to you, put it that way. Absolutely. I'm glad you were able to bring that up. And that idea for investing, phenomenal suggestion for listeners to think about, do some research. The number again, and we're not doing the full 3 hours. We'll make sure Mary is able to get back to rest and other folks can recuperate or whatever else. Folks stateside, I guess it's still very early. It's not even 1 p.m. here, so folks have lots of, I guess, caroling and gift giving and whatever else to do. 641-715-3640, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you have a question or would like to participate. I think I've had a list of things. It's been so much. I think this might have been the first time that we've had Mr. Fox, Mary, Andrew was with us before, but at least Mr. Fox and Mary with us since we had the misfortune of announcing that Pamela Evans-Harris passed away. I know Mr. Fox and some of the other folks here, you all have heard her on the cows, I suspect, over the years. Did any folks want to get in a thought on the passing of Pamela Evans-Harris?
It's very sad and unfortunate that someone who is so important to cows is no longer with us. But I think that we can be encouraged and we can be thankful that she contributed in the way that she did. And she should always be remembered as being very important.
Hear, hear. Much obliged, Mary. Mr. Fox, Andrew.
Yeah, that was a shock to hear the news regarding that, especially when that news broke and then the time of when she did die, that long absence. That was the most hard thing to kind of come to grips with. Like, this person's been dead for a good couple of months before anyone realized that she passed away. It's deeply sad. but she's one of my favorites who's ever came onto the Cows. And the amount of time she came on, not even as a guest, but just to contribute to calling in and asking questions of guests, was massive. And we've got a huge archive of her, which would always live on. But it was a sad loss indeed.
Indeed. I think she passed away February of this year. And I know I didn't find out until the summer. And when I announced it, I think it, about 6 months had passed from the time that she passed away to when I found out and was able to announce to listeners. When I announced it, I think I wrote on Facebook first, and then we did the program like the next day. This summer, I didn't have anybody say, "Oh yeah, I, you know, heard about that a month ago. I knew about that, you know, a long time ago. What's you know, why are you all so behind?" Nobody wrote that. Nobody called in and said that. So I'm to take it that nobody found out, which, you know, can be difficult.
Did you manage to get in contact with it? Sorry to interrupt you, Gus. Did you manage to get in contact with the family at all? Or?
I did. After I posted the obituary, some of the folks, they went through, and because, you know, obviously had family members' names listed there. And so they just went through and were able to match Facebook profiles and look and see some of the pictures. And if I had not been such a victim, I would have remembered, oh yeah, Pam and I were Facebook friends. She was not a big Facebook fan. I'm not either, but I at least do use Facebook regularly. I didn't get the impression that she used it a lot. So we didn't talk like message on Facebook. So I just forgot that we were friends there. So that would have been the smart thing to do, was just tap her page and then boop, I could have hit all of her friends the easy way. But we did it the long way around. And yes, I was able to contact one of her siblings and let them know that, yes, we do have a pretty massive Cows archive with her content, and told her we would be happy to kind of put links together if she wanted to collate all of that and all of that. So, yes, I was able to talk to her family members, and they will let me know how they would like to proceed, if at all.
That cowbell just reminded me of something. Two things. One, before I forget, I sent you an email about a couple of weeks ago regarding a cowbell and Marvin Dunn. Did you get that email?
I sure did. And the second time he came back on the program. So Marvin Dunn was for list. Okay. Marvin Dunn, doctor. Sorry. Dr. Marvin Dunn.
Sorry, so Dr. Marvin Dunn.
No worries, sir. He was on the program. He's down in Florida. He was on the program right before the gubernatorial election in Florida. Ron DeSantis, white man, and I forgot the black male's name. I can't believe it. It was a black male that he was running against. He did not win. That's probably contributing to why. Andrew Gillum, that's it. Andrew Gillum. The black male was heavily favored. Dr. Dunn was super confident that this black male was going to win the election when we had him on the program. And, oh, yeah, he's going to win. He was planning, he was going to write a book about him being the first black governor of Florida and all of this. And all of the polls had Gillum way out in front, like 5%, big lead. Anyway, we had Dr. Dunn back on the program about 10 days later after Gillum lost the election, which I predicted was going to happen. In that interim, Mr. Fox emailed and said, "Hey, I think we got a cowbell here. I think Dr. Dunn is married to a white woman." It's, man, it's so much. When we had Dr. Dunn on the program the first time, I asked him from Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, where she says that the number one thing that is keeping black people from ending racism is black males being in sexual relationships with white women. I asked him if he thought this was true. He said no. He said that prison, he thought that was the number one thing that was holding up progress. In the interim, Mr. Fox emailed and said, "Hey, Dr. Dunn is married to a white woman. We got a cowbell." So we had him back on the program 10 days later. We talked about, obviously, he was incorrect. Mr. Gillum, the black male candidate, lost. We talked about that. And then I was able to say, "Hey, we got a listener who said, hey, you're married to a white woman. Perhaps you are, you know, a little biased on this response. He had a good laugh. He responded. There was some sort of issue with getting that archive uploaded, but it is there. But yes, I got your email. And yes, that got included when we were able to get him back on the program a few days later.
I told, you got him back.
Oh, yeah.
Where is this episode? How come I've missed this?
It's on SoundCloud. It's in Black Talk Radio. Wow. I think there was some sort of problem where that archive did not get inserted at Black Talk Radio Network. Because several other listeners said that they missed it. It is, and it has been at SoundCloud since, you know, whenever the day it happened. But anyway, and I think also it was quick. Because once he lost the election, this was all in response to the election. The election was at the beginning of November, like the 8th, I think. I have to look at the count, but it was like November 8th. So we had him on the next day. So it wasn't like a lot of notice and build up. Anyway, yes, he was back. I read your email to him directly. Yeah, you have to listen to the archive. It was quite.
Oh, yes. I see it here now. Yeah. The cows, Dr. Marvin Dunn. Florida doesn't monkey around. Elects Ron DeSantis governor. Right, got you. Let me download that now. To get it. Wow, I've totally missed that. Totally missed that. Thanks for confirming that. Because yes. I know when you asked him in that episode, not the one which is we're talking about now, the one before, about him being, you joked and said, you know, how you behave or what you're saying, you might be classed as being uppity by, you know, suspected racists. And he laughed about it and he said, yeah, I've been called that. And I don't know why, I just thought something I looked into it a lot deeper, not only being classed as uppity for his work he's done, but for it might be for something else. But when I checked his Facebook profile, he's a serial. Serial cowbells could be used, because I think he's been married at least most probably once or twice. And he has, children to numerous white women. So that uppity part, actually, you know, when I heard that, I just thought of something a lot deeper. So I've done a bit of investigating, and Facebook can give you some jewels if you search, you know, long enough.
Yes, it can. Absolute treasure trove. Yes, much obliged for your Aretha. That word uppity, I was a little hesitant about using the word uppity. I thought that could have been one where he could have slammed the phone down and dipped on us. But yeah, I did think that was important for a lot of reasons. I was not thinking cowbell, but important for a lot of reasons. And yeah, it'll be even better to hear the second time around when all that comes up and the response to all that. Woo! Dr. Marvin, and all of that aside, his book on the history of white terrorism in Florida is pretty out of this world. Lots of constructive information if you are a Florida, well, really, if you're a black person, period, but especially if you live in Florida or have been to Florida. I think even Andrew has been to Florida. Orlando, he went to Disney World. You should get Dr. Dunn's book, The History of Anti-Black, The Beast in Florida. That's it. The Beast in Florida, History of Anti-Black Violence. Stellar. Let's see.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think Andrew might know more than me on this, but I've seen it come up in the news, but I've not looked too deeply into it. It is, topic will be on racism in sports, English football, Raheem Sterling. So I don't know if anyone else on the line has been paying attention to you know, Raheem Sterling mentioning the racist abuse he got. I think he was at the Chelsea game. I don't watch English Premier League football, but this came up. I saw it in the Metro, and I've not read too much into the article, but I know that there was an incident regarding that, and I'm seeing now online about the English coach, the main coach, Gareth Southgate, applauding Raheem Sterling, who is black and I think was born in Jamaica. He's applauding him for speaking out about racism. So I know that was something which happened, I think it was either last week. So if anyone else wants to comment on that, plus a documentary, I think two-part documentary which came out day in November regarding black footballers playing for England. I think it's called Out of Their Skin, hosted by Ian Wright. Cowbell for him as well. So I don't know if anyone else wants to comment on that.
Wow. I'm not a soccer buff, although I think the Raheem Sterling report, I think I did see that. Andrew, did you want to respond? Or Mary?
Yeah, just very quickly. It's just the whole thing about Raheem Sterling. He's as Mr. Fox said, he's hails from Jamaica, as far as I understand it, and he's playing for Manchester City, I think, at the moment. You know, but he suffered racial abuse from a fan, I think it was. I mean, this is a young black footballer who got abused just because he had a tattoo. And he felt that, you know, people were saying, you know, why have you got a tattoo? I think it's of a gun or something like that. But he felt the need to come out and defend himself against these idiots. As far as I'm concerned, he shouldn't have even have bothered. He felt the need to come out and defend himself against people saying, oh, you shouldn't have a gun tattooed on you, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't even think he should have bothered. That's number one. But he suffered racial abuse, I think, from some fan or something like that. But another Premiership footballer not so long ago had a plastic bottle, I think, thrown at him. But this is just old stuff. I mean, this used to happen all the time in this country. You know, I mean, it was a regular occurrence. I think what's better now is that some of these young black players are actually talking about it as it happens. You know, they're not talking about it, which is what some of the older footballers felt they needed to do. So, Cyril, there's a brilliant footballer who died, I think, last year, Cyril Regis, or was it earlier this year, from up near you, I think, Mr. Fox. Brilliant footballer. I used to watch him, obviously, as a kid. His generation of footballers in the 70s and early 80s felt that they couldn't, you know, that they didn't have a voice to talk about this kind of stuff. All of that is what it is. Again, what is good is that some of these African footballers are using their money, taking their money back home and doing things to benefit their villages and towns where they come from. Any black footballers that's going to listen to this, use your money to benefit African people, you know, because some of these guys get paid millions in a month. And that's what, you know, they need to use their money constructively. At the moment, I can't say all of them are using their money constructively.
Can I say something?
Absolutely. Can I just ask Mr. Fox really quick, what is the documentary title? Is it In Their Skin or what?
I think it's called Out of Their Skin. I downloaded it about 3 weeks ago, I think. What I'll do is I'll upload it to Facebook. Just give me one second. Let me get I swear it's Out of Their Skin.
Oh, I got it. I got it.
Yeah.
Much obliged. Thank you, Mary, for your patience. Proceed.
Okay. The Raheem Sterling issue is nothing new. They've been vilifying this poor guy for years. Down to, we have a budget clothes shop here called Primark, where you can, you know, go and pick up a t-shirt for £3. They vilified him for shopping in Primark. Oh, you earn all of this money. You're so cheap. Why do you shop in Primark? He goes and buys himself a sports car. Oh, you're so flashy. Why are you buying the sports car? They compare his black girlfriend to other players' white girlfriends. So it's just been a complete attack on this guy. And down to his tattoo, he can tattoo anything he wants on his body. Just every day, these white journalists, white news reporters, the white media have been gunning for this guy for years. And what stood out for me on the news reports of these so-called fans, in inverted commas, attacking him during his game, is that when that was happening and they were showing the footage of it on the TV, they blurred out all the fans' faces. They blurred all of these white people's faces out. And in amongst that group, there was a black guy just standing there, not saying anything. looking complicit. That really stood out to me. But the way that Raheem did it was very, very clever in terms of the fact that not only did he address that issue, he brought the issue out into the wider context of how black players and white players are treated. So he put up two articles in his Twitter post of a black player who bought his mother a house and a white player who bought his mother a house. The black player who bought his mother a house, the article was, you know, seeking to denigrate him. And the white one was, of course, favourable. And that's how he brought out the differences. And alongside that, the conversation began to be, well, you're applauding me for saying these things now and pointing out the obvious, but where were you when it's been happening this whole time? So Raheem Sterling is just basically a metaphor for them attacking us as black people in this country anyway. And they just use him. Particularly, they've taken a morbid fascination to him, and they've just been explicitly going after him. I mean, they tried it with, I can't remember his name, if it's Daniel or not, Sturridge. They tried it with him years ago, and he slapped that right down. He slapped the hell out of that. They stopped gunning for him. I think they kind of know who to go after, and Raheem Sterling is very humble. He's very much, I think, for them, a safe Negro. So they think, okay, he's fair game to have a pop at. But some of the players just won't have it. And they stay away from the press. Like Sturridge stays away from the press. If it's not football related, don't bother asking him. He'll just tell you, don't ask me that. It's my personal life, don't ask me. Whereas some of them are more willing to capitulate and have a conversation about different things or different facets to do with their life. And Andrew mentioned the plastic water bottle being thrown. That was on Dele Alli on the back of his head. He was attacked. And yeah, there's been other incidents of banana peels being thrown. It's going back to the good old days of football when they can do all of that. But I don't think what they've reckoned on is that the young ones coming up now, they will fight you in this country. Some of them still need some guidance to steer them away from the idea of equality, which is a misnomer, and they need steering away from these pretend people who try to latch themselves onto what they think is hot on black culture. But a lot of the dialogue now is that a lot of these young guys, they will beat you into next Tuesday if you want to go down that route with them. They're less patient than the older generations where that's concerned. So my thing is, let them carry on with it and let's see where the apples fall from the tree. And what Andrew was saying earlier about reinvesting in Africa and the footballers reinvesting in Africa, I think is quite right. They should do that. I went to Africa for the first time in my life this year, and I went to a notoriously unpopular country in this planet, Zimbabwe. And I'll tell you something, it's absolutely magnificent. The people are magnificent. I think all of us black people should run up in there because they feel completely forgotten. But most importantly for me, they have a fighter's mentality over there where they're not going to be run over. They're putting their people, especially they have a special place in their heart for their children. They cherish their children. And over there, you can really make something of yourself. They're very hardworking people. They work for themselves. I don't think a lot of them really work for the government in ways like that, but they're very enterprising people. I would suggest if anyone hasn't been to Africa, maybe start there. I don't know if people want to start elsewhere, but I had designs when I came away from there of where I would like to get somewhere. You know, as a bolt hole, if anything happens, that's the place. They're black focused, they're black centered. They have that. Remember, they've had 37 years of black empowerment in some shape or form through Robert Mugabe, whether or not you agree or disagree with his practices. So they're less likely to show their bellies to their white masters. But yeah, I absolutely agree with Andrew in those respects. But those are just a few of my observations.
Much obliged, Mary. Context of white supremacy. Folks did dial in. I wanted to try to sneak in a few of our callers as well. The person, I don't know if this is Rob in Wisconsin, now San Diego, or someone else. Let's see.
Can I be heard?
Rob in Wisconsin, correct. Yes, sir. You are a little low. If you could speak up, that would be helpful.
Can you hear me clearly now?
Give us another sentence.
Can you hear me clearly now?
Yes, that's better.
Okay, so I just regained entry to the call, but I did just have a short commentary surrounding the holiday. As I spoke last time, I told you that I have been in the hand of VOCs since November 2nd. The people that I moved out here initially to stay with end up putting me out. So I was homeless for about 3 weeks, sleeping outside, beaches. It actually got to the point where I was actually pitching a tent in back of my job and then getting up and going to work. So I got into the shelter program, and just to bring it to the current day, like, the shelter program is ran by churches, and man, how do you say, I think Millie Fuller said it, man, if this problem, people could solve this problem overnight if they wanted to. Each church has been more extravagant than the next. I'm talking about a full kitchen, shower, multiple buildings just to prance around in, schools on site, and you have different volunteers coming in making excellent food every night. This is probably one of the times, one of the better times that I've eaten in my life. And so just to bring it to today, just a smorgasbord of food, like 6-7 tables, all set up, fine china, however you want to say, and just serving a lot of people. And San Diego has the fourth largest homeless population in the United States. And that's all I wanted to share for right now. Thanks for letting me share.
Wow. Surprised they haven't put you on a plane back to Wisconsin already. My goodness.
Last thing. The program helped me find a place. I just got approved to rent a room. And so I should be transitioning into that. And within the next few days, the holiday is kind of slowing up the process. So the comparison from Wisconsin to the rent that I'm about to pay in San Diego, I was renting a 2-bedroom apartment for what I'm about to pay for a room. And that's it.
Yep, rent is definitely higher in California compared to Wisconsin, but, you know, all things considered, are you planning on going back to Wisconsin anytime soon?
Oh, not at all. So even with being homeless, right, this is probably the less stress that I've had in my entire life.
The less, say that again. You said the less, I just didn't hear what you said.
The less stress.
Okay.
The less
okay.
stress I've experienced in my entire life. And it's directly related to the climate change. And the people are, like, I'm not surrounded by a lot of Black people, right? And even the Black people that I do encounter, they don't carry the same aggression and or, you know, wounds that we pick up traveling under this system. Like, it's like the people are different out here. So it's like, I was just telling somebody at work the other day, like, California has presented me the opportunity to actually deal with what's actually bothering me. Like in Wisconsin, it was always something to focus, to put the attention somewhere else. Like, you know, you're really mad about one thing, but you can transfer it to another thing. Like here, like, it's really nothing to be mad about, you know? So yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I'm not going back.
Much obliged. Don't ever let anyone say that Rob does not follow logic, intelligent enough to figure out. I think I am good. I've had my fill with Wisconsin. Smart man or victim, smart victim. And just environment. Racists, they know how to design environments. And in fact, they have done studies. White people, they're not ignorant about racism. They could solve this problem today. That could be our Christmas gift. We'll just go ahead and wrap this racism thing up today. Sorry about all that. We'll cut all that cooning out. They don't want to do that. They enjoy practicing racism. And the environments, the higher the number of black people, NPR, this wasn't, you know, some radical publication. National Public Radio did a study saying, oh, yeah, we know once the number of Negroes in an environment reaches a certain critical mass. I think they had it down to like the percentage. Once it's like 35% of the population is Negroes. Oh, yeah. All those resources and the extravagant churches and volunteers, all of that goes in the trash. You can, you know, get you a stale Twinkie and hope we don't lock you up and put you in jail, which is probably what they did in Wisconsin. We're not about building churches and helping you out and getting you a place. None of that. We are about jailing Negroes in Wisconsin. Once the number of black people starts to drop, oh, all kinds of amenities, resources, help, because we know most of this is not going to Negroes. The person that dialed in, I think this is Thomas in New York. Did you have a comment, question, sir?
Peace to all. Peace to all. Gus, Merry Baby Cracker Jesus Day, Gus. And to everyone else, good to hear from Rob in Wisconsin and all the people across the places of the world where you're being oppressed. Did have a comment and a question. Let me ask a question first. When these racist events, I saw footage of a soccer. I don't call it football. That's not football. That's soccer. But I saw a soccer match where they were throwing monkeys at a black dude or a person being classified as black.
And, they were throwing monkeys at him?
One where they,
you said they threw a monkey at him?
Yeah, they were throwing stuffed monkeys and bananas and stuff at the brother Gus. It was sad. I was like, damn. And I saw another match where it was a similar, you know, thing where they were chanting something that was very racist. I just wanted to know if those matches get played out on television there, and do they edit anything, you know, because I think that they do a very good job here at keeping white people from, you know, remember the Marcus Smart incident, Gus? I mean, he had to actually give an interview and explain what happened, you know, because the media certainly wasn't going to put out that the guy was standing there calling him a nigger, you know, they just showed him getting the guy's face. So, I mean, I just wanted to know if they actually show that on the television where you could hear the racist chants, or do they cut away when the banana peels get thrown on the field?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Back in the day, when I was a kid, right, you could hear it, right? You could hear it. Right. Recently, prior to Brexit, a lot of the racist chanting really died away. Really, with Brexit, however, as has been said, a lot of it's come back. You know, a lot of it's come back. Not just in the UK, all over Europe and Russia, all over the all over Eastern Europe. You know, these people are all racist. You know, I mean, you know, it's, you know, and there's been cases where youth teams, I can't remember the detail, you know, there's one quite well-known case where a youth team that had a lot of black players in it went, I can't remember what country they went to, went away and experienced all this racist chant and all the rest of it. So it's a very common thing, and it's only going to get worse. With Brexit, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. By the way, yeah, we call it football. We now call it soccer, right? you know, and this is the thing, we kick the ball. We play the ball with our feet. You guys, we've removed that game. You know, it's like Australian rules football. You sock into each other. So yeah, we call it football. Yeah.
So but,
on a serious note, they I believe anyway, and it'd be interesting to see what you guys think in the UK. But my belief is that even now, yeah, I would say they edit a lot of it out. You know that's because I mean, we know for a fact it's getting worse because of Brexit. You know.
I would have to, sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
I would have to agree with Andrew, what he said regarding the editing out, because I know they can do that during the live games, edit certain things out, because I remember having a conversation with one of my uncles a couple of years ago, can't be more than 5 or 6 years ago, but he was talking to a white guy at his work, and he was talking about what he hears at the Manchester United games at Old Trafford, and he was saying that you could hear some of the racist chanting even at Old Trafford, which Manchester United is one of the most famous clubs in England. You're going to have an element of that at Chelsea, because I think Raheem Sterling, when he received his racist the most recent racist incident, because in the article I skim read through about 20 minutes ago, he was saying that he does hear, you know, these things being said. So it's not only that time then, but, you know, when he's out on that football pitch, when you have a lot of these English people who start drinking at a very, very early time in the morning, because this is slightly divert. I remember when I was getting the early train from London to Manchester, and this must have been about 7 o'clock in the morning, and some English football fans got on about 7 o'clock in the morning, and this game is going to start in the afternoon, and they're already drinking. They're like on their third drink. So a lot of these English people, when they're in these grounds, they're like on their probably 10th pint, and they're hyped and charged. And it's where you get a lot of this behavior, a lot of this racism, white supremacy being practiced. But a lot of the editing regarding what has been said at a lot of the games does get edited out, because I know when people do like to rush the pitches now, like, you know, like to do like a streak, they don't show that on the camera no more. So if they're not showing that, I think they can do a lot of the editing regarding the noise levels and what is being said during these games. But I know they are doing a lot of editing. And regarding Eastern Europe, a lot of these incidences, which Andrew commented on, happen in a lot of these Slavic countries and Mediterranean countries as well. You have a lot of that going on there. But it's just refined in England now, because you had the British hooligan era of, I think it was mid or early 70s to late 80s, ICF, Chelsea and stuff. I think ICF might be West Ham, to be honest with you. I'm not too sure, but you had a lot of these hooligans who had a huge element in the National Front as well. So when the police cracked down on a lot of this fighting, the hooligan fighting and stuff like that, and it's refined itself now, so you know, you don't get as much of the bananas being thrown, and you've seen it like what happened to John Barnes in the, you know, early 80s and late 70s and stuff like that. But it's totally refined itself. And, you know, the British are, you know, the number ones of being refined regarding racism, white supremacy.
ran. Think they
okay,
got
okay. Great. My. Well, this is my opinion. My comment. From seeing what I see across the pond, and also seeing what I see here, and I follow world politics, or what the United States calls foreign policy, much more than I follow their domestic politics, because that's just racist white supremacy. So I already know what to expect there. But what I'm seeing, I like what I'm seeing. I personally like the Brexit. I support it. I like the Yellow Jackets, or whatever they were called, doing the riots in France. Boy, do they know how to riot in France, man. Woo, we need to take some lessons. And I like what I see here from Trump. It seems like nationalism is the worldwide theme that they're going with. And nationalism versus globalization, or globalism. And I hate globalists, so I'm for it. In my opinion, Britain won't suffer from leaving the EU. The EU will. Britain controls 40% of the world banking system, and they'll control it whether they're in the EU or not in it. So I don't see too much change in there. They still control the banking in Hong Kong, Jersey, the Caribbean, etc. France and other countries, they don't control none of that. They're going to have big problems, especially once their euro, which is backed by nothing but bullets, falls. I mean, I see this as a direct blow to globalists worldwide, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but I'm all for it. I think that a lot of the propaganda that you see in the news, all the news is controlled by the globalists, so that's what you're going to get, is their point of view. But I'm liking what I'm seeing personally, and I'll be my line thinking.
Much obliged, Thomas in New York. I think Draftomania. Did you have a question, comment that you wanted to get in? Thank you, Rob in Wisconsin, Thomas in New York, Draftomania, taking time out of your, I guess this is White Jesus' birthday, to chime in with a question or comment. Much obliged.
Oh, good. Thank you, guests, and welcome. I'd like to say hello to all the guests, and I am so grateful that I have not participated in White Supremacist Holiday, wasted my time and energy to support this system of white supremacy. I have a question for H. Fox. My question is, Mr. Fox, I have been listening to Entilman on your YouTube channel. And I noticed that the stop at the lat on chapter 8. Can you tell me when you will be able to upload the rest of that book? I thought that book was very informative. It basically explains the whole psychology of white supremacy and how white supremacists and how they are, how they function and how they think. I think that's a very important literature in order for victims of white supremacy to understand the system of white supremacy. And I just wanted to throw out the new bill that was they just put out the Equality Act bill. I would encourage all to read that bill to find out what that's all about. It's basically in regards to the homosexuality act, how you have to basically have to accept these people no matter what, and the impact that it could have on us as a group. I would just encourage just to look into it, and maybe after you look into it further, we can discuss it on I'm not sure. I guess I'm compensatory calling. And that's all I have. And thank you so much for allowing me to share. Have a great day.
Much obliged, Draftomania. Guess Mr. Fox, our question about Ben Tillman, Reconstruction of White Supremacy.
I'll get the rest of that uploaded by tomorrow. The rest of them, I think I might have four more to do, but I'll get the rest of them up by tomorrow.
There you go.
Much obliged. Thank you.
Again, Mr. Fox, super contributor, uploading many, many hours of the Cows content to YouTube, helping folks access the material. Much obliged for all of your hard efforts. I hope the content is worthy of your time and energy and the folks listening. I read Ben Tillman and the Reconstruction of White Supremacy. I did the narration for that book months after, days really, after Dylan Storm Roof's terrorist attack in Charleston, South Carolina. That was importantly time-stamped. That was right there. Donald Trump going to be president was right there, that book. So many references to Donald Trump. Isn't that right, Draftomania? That was right there. How did Donald Trump become president? Right there. Just read that book.
It was so on point, and I was like, wow, this is like, I mean, if you had any confusion about white people being on code and their codification, I mean, he was just raw and straight out telling you how they think. And like you said, it's like, you know, if I like my racist to be just blunt, you know, I would rather you tell me who you are and not sugarcoat it. And that's exactly who Ben Tillman was. And you are exactly right. You did that book as a result of the Dylan Roof situation.
Very important book. You got two of them in this program. The Beast in Florida, A History of Anti-Black Violence, Dr. Marvin Dunn, and Ben Tillman and the Reconstruction of White Supremacy, Stephen Kantrowitz, a suspected racist white man. Incidentally, I even asked him to be a guest on the program, and he said he would, and then he said he hurt his wrist and all these excuses and nonsense. Anywho, we read the book. Very constructive information. Anyone who is confused about Donald Trump and how that happened, you should go back and check out that book. And again, right after Dylan Storm Roof's attack, what a snapshot of the, I guess, summer of 2015 when we were reading that text.
Could you repeat the book, The Beast? What was the name of that book again? The Beast?
The Beast in Florida, A History of Anti-Black Violence. That's Dr. Marvin Dunn's book on the history of them terrorizing black people in Florida, basically.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see. If any folks have any other final comments, questions they need to get in. I'd said we were going to do 60 since, you know, everything, the festivities, and we are over that. But other comments, questions, folks need to get in.
Sorry, quick question for you, Gus.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, do you ever do any looking through the comment section on both of the YouTube channels I have, Mr. H Fox and Mr. H Fox Channel 2? Do you ever go through the comment section on the videos, the Cows videos?
I have been through a few. I think there was a white, or what I suspect, it seemed like a white woman who said something where I've commented. I don't get too in the comments because that can be a rabbit hole and fussing and fighting. But I do try to look when I hit anytime that I hit a page or an episode, I do try to look at the comments. And if somebody, especially if it's a white person that says something, I do try to respond. If it's a black person, I don't say anything. But the white people, I do try to respond.
Yeah. I tell you, the most hate you get, right, is most hate which comes to you are the Jane Elliott videos, and that's on the first channel, Mr. H Fox. That's all of her appearances. I think she's done four appearances. That's the most hate you get on there. And then the recent hate you're getting is for the book club on The Hate You Give. you're catching it. You are catching it on there. The fire and sling and arrows you're getting there is unbelievable. I'm going to do a quick post on that on Facebook, just with a lot of the comments and what people are saying about you, especially some white people on there as well, about how you don't know how great this book is. You've got some confused black people going, you know, black people need to wake up. This book's an eye-opener. Is this unbelievable?
Yes.
The comment section is Oh, God. At times, I just skim through it. At times, because, you know, I'm busy through work obligations and stuff. So the weekend is where I get the most time to do the uploading. But I can't keep on top of the comments. But I know, like, when I come in the comment section, sometimes I go through there now. And it's just like, yeah, you're still catching it from the hate you give.
Well, I will make an effort to go through and respond to some of those comments. What to say? What, that is one of the most important books I think that we've done in the book club, and formerly the worst book I've ever read, and one of the most important that we did, I was going to say this year, but in the history of the book club, and from a Black educator, no less, who said, you should take a look at this because lots of Black children are reading this in school. That was the only reason that we read that book, not because someone said it was great or the movie, just a Black teacher said, you should take a look at this. This is what our children are being subjected to.
Mm-hmm. I think the next one is, yeah, there's a lot of hate against justice as well being on there.
That's, I don't even know what to say to that at this point. I mean, yeah. For someone who's almost 20, I mean, what is the gripe? Like, get out of your feelings. You're really in the past. And incidentally, I can only say today I looked back at the compensatory call and we had all the issues and such this weekend. The last sound clip that was on the compensatory call-in was about a suspected racist in Portland, Oregon, which is 3 hours from where I am in Seattle. This 60-year-old white man, who's a veteran, no less, 60-year-old white veteran took a butcher knife and threatened an 8-year-old Black child and his brother. They arrested him. They didn't even charge him with hate crimes. He called them niggers and threatened them with his knife and all that. They arrested him. He's out on bond, what have you. And I said this past Saturday, I said, that right there is why justice was on the program at 10. Now, I just said, again, he pulled a butcher knife on an 8-year-old. She was here at 10. Pulled a butcher knife on him and called him a nigger and threatened his brother as well. His brother was older, let's say 15, 14, something. But that just happened this weekend. Now I could, you know, go through the archives and pick out those reports, you know, willy-nilly. That's why justice was on the program. I know many Black people had a problem with that. I'm sure racists had a problem, but that's why racists, they do not stop and say, oh, well, this is a 10-year-old Negro. We won't mistreat them. No, they do the Emmett Till. They do the Ayanna Stanley Jones. They do the Tamir Rice. That's why justice was on the program. If you do not inform, educate your children about racism to the best of our ability, what's going to happen to them?
Correct.
Lots of hate taken over the years for justice. I remember that even when she first joined that. We do the yoga retreat, Tennessee, February 2010. I can definitely let folks know lots of heat taken over justice being on the program at 10. Wowee. The folks griped and griped and complained and complained. White people, non-white people. When you're going to make an effort to counter racism, it is not a popularity contest. Follow a lot. That's all I've ever heard Mr. Fuller say. Not stop and don't do it. If people gripe and call you names, not stop and don't do it. If people get upset or don't think what you're doing is correct, follow logic. Make an assessment based on logic about what you're doing. If it's correct, is it having a constructive impact? If it is, then you keep going. If other folks are griping and complaining, you should probably do more of it because that's just the system we are in. Wow, the hate you give. Any other last comments, questions, folks want to get in, observations?
Yes, Gus, I was just going to ask you, the National Museum of African American History, am I right in assuming that the government funds it, or is that funded solely by African Americans?
I would be stunned if that is funded exclusively by African Americans. All of those national museums, I'm very certain, have some sort of federal funding for them being put up, especially if you're talking about the new project that they just put in Washington, D.C. Like, I'm very sure that's federally funded. I'm very sure that a conglomerate of individuals classified as Black did not finance that. I would be way, way astronomically out of my mind and correct if that happened. I cannot fathom that under any circumstances.
The reason why I'm asking is because in London, Brixton, there is a Black Cultural Archive, right? Now, the Black Cultural Archives has been around for, well, for about 20 years, I think, right? Now, it only, you know, there's been a new building that's just been built, probably, I think, it opened about a couple of years ago. Prior to that, it was just in another building somewhere that you had to go and find, and you could only find it if you knew it was there. Now it's got a brand new spanking building, opened 2 years ago in the middle of Brixton. Brixton is no longer an African Caribbean area, by the way. It's been totally gentrified. The government has just pumped in £200,000 to basically apparently help with the work. All right. In Senegal, Ghana, there's I don't know if anyone knows this, but there's a museum of black civilizations and this is huge, a brand new massive building that's been financed by the Chinese, right? Now, on the surface, on one level, I think these buildings are great. I've been to the one in Brixton, obviously, quite a few times. The exhibitions could be better, but, you know, I mean, it's better than nothing. And it carries loads of bits and pieces from the African Caribbean community going back 50, 60 years, right? Which is where the tickets, the boarding passes that Theresa May destroyed, that's where they should have went, or somewhere similar. The whole thing about foreigners funding African institutions and museums worries me, because to my mind, whoever funds these historical organizations, to my mind, can decide what goes into them and then can really begin to form a historical past pertaining to us. I find it worrying personally. I don't know what you think. I don't know how it works in America, but we're talking a time game, if not now, but in 13, 14, 50 years time, you know. So I just find it really worrying when foreigners, especially China, financing the Museum of Black Civilizations in Senegal. You know, it just tells me, what is the Chinese long game? Well, I think we all know that, but, you know, I just find it very, very, very suspect and short-sighted of Africans worldwide to accept non-African money to fund our historical organizations. I don't think that's good for our children. But, you know, I'll leave it there because I know time's short.
Well, according to the report online, the National Museum of African American History, the one that's here in Washington, D.C., that opened in 2016, that got $270 million of federal funding. And then they raised more than $400 million privately. So I'm sure that came from a lot of different sources. I am certain some non-white people contributed. I am also certain that some white people contributed to that $400 million in private funds, but $270 million in federal funding. I haven't been to this museum. Some of the Cal's listeners have gone to the museum and have dialed in to share some of their thoughts, observations on the project, what was there, what was not there, what seemed to be getting a lot of attention, the casket of Emmett Till, Dr. Tommy Curry, the man not black misandry, what got some of the attention that was there. And it went to a lot of the points that you just raised. If the people that are funding these projects obviously are going to have a lot to say about what's going to be there, what's not going to be there. And exactly, these museums, I seriously doubt that you're going to have, you know, Robert F. Williams pistol. I seriously doubt that you're going to have Mark Essex pistol. It's going to be the casket of Emmett Till, things of that nature. System of racism, white supremacy.
Yep. Same as Amina Castle. But anyway, that's a discussion for another time.
Indeed. Again, if folks have been, if we have listeners who've been to the museum and you have a thought or two, feel free. I know a number of folks have shared, written in. I think I've read a few comments from people who've gone as well. And that the lynching museum that opened in Alabama, a big victim in Alabama, recently called in and gave some of his thoughts on that as well, which is another one. Lots of lynched and castrated black males. Dr. Tommy Curry, the man not race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood. Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The book club continues. Thank God we are not reading The Hate U Give. Everybody satisfied? Got all their thoughts, comments, questions?
I'll leave it, but I was going to ask you about the shutdown. Donald Trump's shutdown of, how do you call it, Congress? Or is it not paying the state workers? But I know time's short, Gus.
What was the question about the shutdown?
Yeah, it's just how is that going to affect African people, black people in America? You know, how is that going to affect? I mean, are a lot of African people not going to get, because there's a thing here about whether or not state workers are going to be paid, and are they going to be working, and who is that going to affect? You know, are a lot of our people working for the in the UK, in London, lots of black men and women work for government, local government. Are you with me? So I'm wondering, if people are not going to be paid, how does that affect African-American communities? You know, are a lot of our people working for the government, working for the state?
That is a good question. I think, yes, sir, Thomas in New York. Just, I was going to say really quick, I do think you do have, I think in the United States, there are a lot of black people that have government, what they call government jobs. I think with this, though, from what I was reading, number one, I don't think every government post is going to be shutting down, like the post office is not shutting down and things like that. So that would be one. And two, I think it would depend on how long is this going to last in terms of the disruption. I remember when they were talking about the shutdown when President Obama was there in, was that 2004? Some time ago when President Obama was there, and we talked about this, and I do remember some black people calling in and talking about how the shutdown that they were talking about them may impact them and the concerns that they had. I have not asked this time around, so I'll be curious to inquire to see. Thomas in New York, you were going to respond?
Sorry, I was muted. It's funny that the prior president shut the government down because he wanted to push DACA, which was to let the Mexicans stay, and Trump wants to build a wall, so he shut it down for that. It's like night and day. The blacks are highly employed by the government. What I found funny, interesting about this shutdown, because before they knew it was a partial shutdown, they went out and they made sure that everyone knew that the NORAD will be tracking Santa Claus. That part won't be shut down, so your kids will be able to track Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. And I thought that was very interesting. The thing I wanted to say is I heard the Hate U Give commentary. I would love to see a movie about, based off the book on Bill Tillman, from Ben Tillman. Reconstruction of white supremacy. That I will go to see, without a doubt. And I'll just enjoy your baby cracker Jesus Day, sir.
I will do my best. A biopic on Ben. They could do a biopic on Ben Tillman. He had one eye. He was out leading lynch mobs. Like, that would be dramatic. Like, it wouldn't just be, you know, a staunchy historical document. Like, a biopic on Ben Tillman. I would be for it. Spike Lee. Yes. What a nickname. A Ben Tillman biopic. He was governor. He was almost president. They can weave in how Clemson got founded. Biopic on Ben Tillman. I'm all for it. If we have any film students, if you're looking for a project, biopic on Ben Tillman. With that, we will be here Thursday at minimum. Book club, I am looking forward. Dr. Tommy Curry's The Man Knot, Race, Class, Genre, and the Dilemmas of Black Manhood. Compensatory call-in on Saturday. Neutralizing Workplace Racism on Friday. We should have the folks in Sacramento, California. That's way up north from Robin, now San Diego. But folks in Sacramento talking about how they used yoga, in addition to other projects, to help combat black infant mortality rates in Sacramento specifically. That should be coming up after the new year next week. But if you have comments, questions, gripes, suggestions, support for The Hate U Give, drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Much obliged to all the folks who participated, wherever you happen to be, Thomas in New York, Draftomania, Rob in San Diego, Mary, Andrew, Mr. Fox. Thanks, everyone, for sharing a bit of your time and energy. Seriously, I hope if folks did get some time away, you didn't have to work and all that, replenish. If that means doing some cleaning at the residence, that is uses of time and energy Mr. Fuller talks about, doing some cleaning, things that need to get done, great. If it's spending constructive time with people that you care about, great. If it's getting some rest, although a lot of us are sleep deprived and don't rest well, great. Whatever you can do that is of constructive value, the way we use our time and energy is important. If it's taking time to research what are investment opportunities on the continent, great. Anything of constructive value with how we use our time, not celebrating, tracking Santa and all of this other foolishness, being wise with our use of time and energy as we move into 2019. That is constructive counter-racism. Certainly, let's be sober. Lots of liquor flowing. They were bragging about that yesterday, the holidays, and let's go get this drink and let's go get that drink. That is not helping us at all. That's just going to make it easier for racists to continue to terrorize us. Dr. Welsing, Pamela Evans Harris, I am sure they would say absolutely. Let's be sober. Let's take care of ourselves so we can solve this problem immediately. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we're in a vehicle, driver, passenger, anywhere we are on the road in the world. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Kyle signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.